That's right. We are back, baby. Back in a big way. We're talking about UFC 299. Recapping it. Technical Knockout, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. Here we are. Me, Hussein, him, Jordan, Patrick, James. We're going to do it. We're going to talk about UFC 299. It was an awesome card. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Tuivasa versus Tybora, the next main event in the Apex, coming back to it. But more importantly, we got a great card last weekend. Phenomenal card for the people who tailed us on the betting picks. We had some good picks last week. And great card to watch, for sure. For me, probably best card of the year so far. What do you think, Jordan?
It was good. I mean, but how can you have that many names on the card and not be a good one? They all delivered. Most of them delivered. We'll get to one in a second that didn't deliver in the way that I thought it should. But Sugar Sean gets it done. Two things I learned is Sugar Sean gets better and better, and Chito is fucking impossible to put down. Like, he took some shots.
Yeah, man. I mean, we talked about it on the preview that the dude he's too tough. You know, maybe too tough for his own good. And O'Malley showed that five times over in this fight. Really put just a tremendous amount of damage on Chito. It looked like the Chris Moutinho fight, honestly. And that it was a punching bag, essentially, for O'Malley to do whatever he wanted to. And he showed a lot of really cool tricks, man. He showed a lot of cool stuff. His jab looked great. The kicks looked great. The spinning back kick to the body when Chito would circle one way, the leg kick when he circled the other way, the right hand when he circled that way. Great performance, great striking performance from O'Malley. Did a great job of pressuring and countering while he was pressuring, and also moving back and getting out of range before Chito could return. He was way faster than the guy. And just, you know, great performance from the champ, man. Honestly, it was awesome. It's cool to see him get some more wrinkles to his game and have a very willing dance partner, you know?
Yeah, I will say something that I noticed, especially after you called it out. He does seem to have to, you know, wrap his hands up or get a – I saw him in a boot after his fight. So I feel like that output is going to catch up with him eventually. It's obviously doing wonders for him now, but, you know, how long can your hands keep on – taking that type of damage that seems to be a little bit more, I don't know, prevalent with Sean O'Malley, I guess. You know, I mean, obviously, if you're going to punch somebody's face for 25 minutes, it's going to hurt. But it seems like it's more so with O'Malley.
Yeah, I mean, I think, anybody else, you know, might not be a problem in future fights, because I think a lot of other people would have went down from those shots, you know. He had to hit Chito like 500 times or something. I think it was actually like 240, I think they said was the official count. But, you know, it was insane, man. He breaks his hands every fight, like we said. So he'll probably take some time off from this one. He was in the boot after the fight. He landed some good kicks that I think, you know, left him sore. Maybe, you know, maybe re-aggravated something in his ankle. I hope not. I haven't seen a post-fight medical work yet, but Chito landed that punch at the end of the fight. Did you see that, Jordan?
No,
it was ridiculous. It was like so the whole fight, you know, O'Malley is just racking up offense and just beating the shit out of him. Really, at several points, you know, he landed huge shots that would have put anybody else down, like that knee in the second round. It sounded like a gunshot. It was crazy. And then, you know, later in the fight, he landed, a nice right hand that, broke Chito's orbital, it looked like, or at least, you know, hurt him really bad and messed up his eye. But at the end of the fight, at the very end of the fight, in the last second, like, you know, 4:59 or whatever, Chito was starting to pressure him finally and landed a left hook to the body that O'Malley literally like folded over, like. When he got hit, he folded over and he backed up, and it was the end of the fight, though. It was literally in the last second, and they, like, dapped each other up, and O'Malley went down like this and, like, chilled in the corner and just, like, sat down and had to, like, get his win back because he got hit so clean in the liver there. And it was just like, God damn it, Chito, why didn't you do that 30 seconds ago even? You know what I mean? Like, he could have finished him there, dude. It was a tough shot, and, you know, Joe Rogan asked him about it in the post-fight interview in the Octagon. He's like, you know, after he went through like the normal spiel of like, oh, you know, what a great performance, good job, you know, how does it feel, whatever, put this one behind you. Then he was like, so he landed that punch into your body at the end of the fight, and he was like, whoo. O'Malley was like, ooh, that was a good one, you know. He recognized, he gave it its credit where it was due. But yeah, it was just funny as hell that, like, it's such a Marlon Chito Vera, like, you know, perfect example of him to lose the entire fight handedly and then land a huge strike with literally no time left in the fight that makes people think, like, oh, man, he could have got it, you know? I mean, very Diaz Brothers-esque is Chito with that one. But, yeah, man, it sucks for Chito. You know, he fought his ass off. He wasn't able to get it done. O'Malley, like we said, improved so much since the first fight. Chito hasn't improved that much since that fight. He seemed to kind of stagnated. So, you know, O'Malley took complete advantage of that position there and just, you know, put the pace on the guy, man.
I'll say bold move on him calling out Ilya this fast.
Yeah, man, I don't like it.
Or I think it's probably a smarter decision for him because that means he keeps the belt that much longer. There's not much for him to lose going up there and fighting Ilya at 45. Whereas the next guy is Merab. I do think he might be ducking Merab a little bit. Like, yeah, I wouldn't count Sean O'Malley out to get it done against Merab, but I don't know if he wants too much part of Merab right now because that takedown game is relentless.
Yeah, man, I think it's a very interesting fight. I think it's a fight that the people want too. You know, I don't think many people are clamoring
Merab deserves it. You know what I mean? And two, yeah, we kind of talk about this a lot, but I feel like you have to clear out your division or at least get a two or three decisive win streak.
Yeah,
you know, defending your belt, and then you can
establish
talk about
yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's a lot of, you know, like a guy, we're a hop skip away from boxing.
Yeah, I mean, like people. Volkanovski did it, you know. Volkanovski had like six defenses or whatever, like,
yeah,
you know what I mean, like at that point it makes sense, you know. But well, if you're somebody at, like, I mean, Makhachev and, or Teporia,
well,
who just got the belt,
look at Volkanovski's position too. He beat up everybody, and then the guy that's beating up everybody he beat four times. So
yeah, exactly.
So it's like well, he has like a little gatekeeper, so to speak.
Yeah,
but I think that's what he's going for. I think he would prefer Teporia because he keeps his belt no matter what happens, whereas with Merab, he might get wrestle fucked to death.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the post-fight press conference, and they asked Dana White about it, and he was like, no. Nah. Like, he shut it down immediately. He was like, well, he told them he wanted to see Teporia defend against lightweights, against featherweights, and O'Malley to defend against bantamweights. Like, there's plenty of people in line in both divisions, so there's no reason to do that fight right now. So, I mean, I think they both get a couple defenses. It would be an interesting matchup. I do think they both can get a couple defenses. I mean, Merab is a very tough fight for O'Malley, but I also kind of feel like it's a winnable one. You know, Merab tends to get rocked in the first round. He got rocked in the first round against Cejudo. He got rocked in the first round against Marias. And both of those guys are nowhere near the level of sniper and power threat that O'Malley is. And if O'Malley hurts you in the first round, there's a good chance that he's going to be able to, you know, finish the fight there or at least build up on something and, you know, make it hard for you to come back. That being said, Merab is somebody that's never out of a fight. So, I mean, if he doesn't get finished in the first round, I expect him to really drown O'Malley and it'd be very reminiscent of any other Merab fight where you see the soul get, you know, sucked out of the other guy's body. But I do think it's going to take somebody that is a very big power threat in the first round to get Merab out of this winning streak. You know, and O'Malley's like the best example of that right now. So I think it's a great fight, and I'm very excited to see it. I hope they make it. I think they will make it. Everybody seems to recognize that Merab's the number one contender, and it just seems like the fight to make, man. I think they're going to do Corey versus Umar. Corey Sandhagen called out Umar Nurmagomedov. So I think the winner of that fight will fight the winner of Merab versus O'Malley. In the meantime, I think they should do Chito versus Jan. That's what I'm thinking after Jan. Yeah, I mean, they tried to make it a few times and it kept falling out. But you know, Jan won this weekend. We'll talk about it in more detail in a few minutes, but and Chito lost. So I think it makes sense divisionally. You know, Jan coming off of that 3-fight skid, now getting back in the winning column, and, you know, Cheeto coming off of a title fight. I feel like, you know, Jan probably wants to get right back in the mix. So I think it's a good fight to make. But yeah.
Dustin Poirier gets it done.
Yeah, dude, that was insane. For me, that I think they gave it the fight of the night. They gave it fight of the night. And for me, it was definitely like the most hype moment of the night, you know. We talked about the analysis when we did the analysis on the card last week. We both picked Benoit Saint Denis under the impression that it was a 3-round fight. I said in the analysis that if it was 5 rounds, I'd pick Poirier, but it's not. And it turns out it was 5 rounds. I mean, it ended up not making a difference because Poirier knocked him out in the second round. But, you know, had I known that, I would have been picking Poirier. He ended up getting it done with that huge knockout. Benoit Saint-Denis also had a staph infection on his forehead. That news came out midweek. And, you know, when I saw that, I thought that was not great. And then I found out that it was 5 rounds, and I was like, well, now I'm definitely betting on Poirier. And I put a little money on him late in the week, and it paid out very nicely. Benoit Saint-Denis looked good in that first round. He was able to take down Poirier, push him to the fence. But, you know, he has a real shortcoming in his game right now. I mean, he's a young guy. He'll, you know, I'm sure he'll shore it up. But, you know, when he gets in these exchanges along the fence, he tends to, you know, maybe land the first strike or even land the second strike, but he'll definitely get hit with one while he's in that exchange. You know, he's not very good at hitting and not getting hit. And, you know, that's well and fine when you're fighting guys who, you know, maybe aren't the biggest power threats, or, you know, if you're able to take somebody down at will or anything like that, if you're able to, you know, really out muscle these guys. But that cannot last that long for you. And it's definitely not going to be the kind of exchanges you want to get into if you're going to go into a title fight or get into that top five contention. You know, somebody like Dustin Poirier, if you let him hit you, is going to hit you harder than you've ever been hit. And that's what Benoit Saint-Denis found out the hard way this last Saturday when Poirier was able to land that beautiful uppercut, I think it was at one point. It was an uppercut. Then he hit him with a right hook and a left straight, you know, not in sequence of each other. It wasn't in one combination. It was like he landed the uppercut. He jumped the guillotine, and then he went for the right hook, jumped the guillotine again, and finished him with the left straight again.
What I want to know is Dustin Poirier and Cody Brundage training together or something with all of these ill-advised, like, guillotines. I love how you even heard his corner, like, don't jump the guillotine. And then fucking Poirier's like, jump the guillotine.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Yeah,
he's like, I'm gonna get one. He got the problem is he almost got Khabib in it, and now he's been searching for it ever since.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's like, probably hidden it in the gym, I guess, because he hasn't hidden in a fight. They said on the broadcast he never won a fight by guillotine. Like, he's won by submission before. I remember, you know, when he first came in the UFC, he had a lot of darces. But
he wants the guillotine.
He wants the guillotine, and I don't know, man. I mean, maybe it's because he was fighting a Frenchman. Maybe he told his his family or something, like, bet on me getting the submission. I'm going to guillotine the Frenchman, you know? But it didn't work out that way. He was able to get that knockout, though, man, and it was a big one. So great job by Poirier, you know, keeping himself at the top of the division. And, you know, they talked about it after the fight and the post-fight interviews and stuff, but this is really the kind of performance at the stage of Dustin Poirier's career that cements him as a legend in the sport. You know, dude already would have gone in the Hall of Fame either way for all the incredible wars he's had over the years. The Gaethje fight, the Hooker fight, you know, the list goes on. Chan Sung Jung fight, the Conor McGregor fights, and now he just, you know, puts another little capstone in there by turning back such a dangerous prospect that everybody thought was going to beat him. You know, minus 200 favorite, and Benoit Saint-Denis, and well, knocking him out like that.
That win's going to age well as well. I think Benoit Saint-Denis is going to come back from this a lot stronger, and that's just going to be another testament. I wasn't always the biggest Poirier fan, but he's definitely turned on the last couple years to make me, enjoy his fights.
Yeah, man.
Dude, fucking, how about Michael Venom and Page getting it done?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kevin Holland got frustrated in this fight really bad, and it's hard not to, you know, if you're fighting somebody like MVP who's so elusive and inflammatory. You know, the guy's talking shit the whole time, doing like these funny little movements and shit. It's very frustrating. And
Kevin Holland got Kevin Holland is what happened.
Pretty much, you know, Holland is known for doing that kind of shit early in his career. And, you know, he found out the hard way what it was like today by somebody who's a lot faster than him. I think that was the big difference, was the speed on Michael Venom Page and the fact that they're both like very similar size.
It makes me so upset that UFC didn't sign him fucking 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's on him, honestly. I don't think it's on the UFC. I mean, I know they've been interested in him. The guy wanted to stick in Bellator and fight his taxi drivers and lightweights and shit like that. But now, you know, and now he's in the UFC. I'd like to see him fight some good fighters. Obviously, the matchup that is jumping out the page to me right now is Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. I think that'd be a very fun fight. But, you know, there's also a part of me that is like, fucking give him the hardest wrestler that there is or something like that, and let's see if he's really about that life, you know? But I do think, like, honestly, man, you know, the only person that really fits that bill for me in that way would be somebody like Burns or Sean Brady or Bilal or something like that. He does not deserve the Bilal fight after fighting Kevin Holland. If they give him Sean Brady, I really do think that MVP might be able to kill him, you know, like with a flying knee or something like that. I like Brady. I like Page's chances in that fight.
I bet you $100 he pulls Neil Magny.
Oh, that'd be a great fight. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I bet you that's exactly who they're going to give to him next.
No, I don't think so, man. I think they try to push him up the ladder, I think. They want to get him against Leon Edwards in fucking England for millions and millions. Billions of dollars, you know.
Ooh, that would do well.
Yeah, man. All British main event. They go crazy. That English crowd goes crazy for their people.
I'm just saying, whenever they put up Neil Magny, everyone be like, "Oh shit, you told me so," and I'm like, "Hell yeah, I told you so."
Yeah, no, I like Magny's chances in that fight too. You know,
really? Do you think Magny would be able to get it done?
I think he's tough as nails, and he has a great clinch. You know, and you know, Kevin Holland's not a great wrestler. He wasn't, and he was able to put Page in a really tough position in that second round. So I mean, I don't know. I think Magny's a tough out for anybody.
They give him Shavkat.
That'd be awesome. That'd be a great fight. If, let's say, Shavkat, you know, gets to the belt and Page is, you know, building himself up sort of how Chandler did, they make that fight for the belt, that'd be fucking phenomenal. Because otherwise I don't think MVP would take that fight if Shavkat wasn't the champion. You know what I mean? That fight's way too dangerous for him.
Yeah, who is it called out Shavkat?
Jack Della Maddalena in the fight right before this. Might as well get to that fight. I mean, honestly, there's not much to talk about in the Holland fight. It was just a great performance from MVP. But that Jack Della Maddalena fight, woo, that was a banger, dude. That fight was awesome.
It was hard to see Gilbert Burns go down, though. God.
Yeah, man. That's why I don't want to see Burns versus Page either, because I don't want to see him get knocked out like that again, you know? This fight was a grit fest for sure, though. Both guys put it all out on the line. Burns with a lot of takedowns against Maddalena. I think it was a career high for Burns in his takedowns landed. I think he landed like 7. And then for Maddalena, obviously, that's the most times he's ever been taken down. Crazy fight. Both guys were having their success. Maddalena, I thought, won the first round. I thought Burns won the second round. And then that third fight, it looked like Burns was getting away with it. He was taking him down and beating him up on the ground. And Maddalena at one point did like some kind of breakdancing escape. He went for like a somersault of sorts and was able to get back to the feet. And Burns immediately went for a takedown. And Maddalena went for a knee and kneed him right in the head. And it was able to finish that fight with a bunch of brutal ground and pound elbows and punches. So great performance there. Big, you know, maybe not a comeback. I mean, I guess it was a comeback in the sense that it looked like the fight was starting to lose for him. He was very much in the fight the whole time, though, and was able to get that victory and put down Gilbert Burns. And, you know, that's going to put Maddalena in the top five, you got to think. And he called out Shavkat Rakhmonov. That's a great fight. Rakhmonov responded and said something like, "Your days are numbered," or some shit like that. Some fucking weird, crazy, ominous shit.
God, dude, he is so scary. Oh,
I love him. He's great.
Yeah, I know. He's terrifying.
I like that he plays into it too, you know?
Well, the motherfucker, he's like, his favorite animal is horse, and his favorite meat to eat is horse. I don't think he's playing. I think the dude might be like just a fucking Neanderthal psychopath, something.
Yeah, that's my guy. He'll be out there in the mountains, you know what I'm saying, with that hat on and shit. He's gonna easy. I don't know, man. That's a great fight, though. Madalena versus Rachmanov. And, you know, I think it's an awesome matchup, not only because both guys are so well-rounded, but because it seems like they can test each other in the places that they're both weakest, you know? For Shavkat, that being his head movement and his striking defense, he takes a lot of big punches from Jeff Neal. He took a lot of shots. Even Wonderboy was able to land some shit on him before he was taken down and beat up. And Madalena is a very accurate and powerful striker. And if he's able to, you know, gain some offense on Rachmanov, it's going to be very interesting to see how his chin holds up. And on the other hand, Madalena's biggest weakness so far, it seems, is his grappling. And Rachmanov is one of the best grapplers in the division. So I think it'd be a great fight. It's a good fight to make while they do Bilal versus Leon. Hopefully, for God's sakes, they make that fight. And, you know, I think the division is in a great spot right now, the welterweight division. So, huge win there from Jack Della Maddalena. We love to see it. We've been following him on the pod since, you know, when he made his first fight in the UFC, or I think it was, let me check the record, bud. So he was one fight in the UFC when we started doing this podcast. And, you know, we've been picking him every fight since. Guy is 7-0 now, I think, or 6-0 in the UFC. So, great shit right there.
Damn, we should have reached out to him day one.
Yeah, man, what the fuck? What were we doing, you know? everybody that's been following him in the pundit community and stuff, they recognize how great he is, and you know, how it seems like more than anything, he's a very well-studied fighter. You know, he seems to be a student of the game. Dude's a beast, and I'm excited to see how he continues to develop here. Piotr Jan was able to turn back Song Yadong in that bantamweight scrap to start off the card. I thought that would have been the fight of the night, honestly. That fight was awesome. The Despora fight, of course, was incredible, and like I said, was the most hype moment. But the Yadong versus Jan fight was very high stakes and high pressure the whole time. Both guys were just crashing into each other, you know, exchanging leather. Yadong won the first round, as we expected. You know, he's a fast starter, and Jan is a bit of a slow starter. He was able to take advantage of that in that first round. Second round, Jan won. Third round was very close, so close. It was like, at a certain point, they put up the stats. It was 18-18 on the significant strikes on both sides for the third round. And then Jan was able to get a takedown with like 2 minutes left in the round, and got off some good ground and pound and stamped his ticket to that decision victory. You know, no controversy there. Jan was able to pick up that second and third round very nicely, and looked good, man. It was great to see him come back into the winning column. You know what I mean? The guy's had a rough stretch lately, and they gave him a fight that was very tough with Song Yadong, and he was able to pass it with impunity. So great job by Piotr Jan. I'm proud of the guy. Happy to see him get back in that winning column, and we'll see what happens as the division unfolds. But I think that puts him right back there in that top five, because Yadong looked like he was, you know, coming for that top five spot for sure.
Give him time; he'll be there.
Yeah. I mean, he's a young buck. I think he's only like 26 or 27. So, he's only 26. So. The guy has a lot more time to develop in the sport, and I think he's going to come back with a vengeance. I feel bad for the next guy that fights him. Then on the prelims, ooh, let's say, you know what I mean? This one felt good, you know? Curtis Blaydes was able to put down Jailton Almeida in the second round with some big punches. Almeida won that first round. And, you know, we've been fans of Almeida for a long time on this podcast. It was that Derek Lewis fight that kind of soured him a little bit in our minds, and made us a little bit more aware that he might be just very one-dimensional. You know, we knew that, you know, his one dimension being the grappling is always, you know, his path to victory in every fight, but we thought that he'd have a little bit more to show against somebody who's as much of a canvas on the ground as Derek Lewis is, and he was not able to get it done. In this fight, he was able to get some takedowns on Curtis Blaydes early in the first round. But as the fight went on, Blaze was able to defend the takedowns better and better and was able to find that knockout in the second round, man. And, you know, when I first when I saw it, so what happened is that, you know, Almeida goes for the takedown. He ends up on his knees. He can't finish it. And Blaze punches him in the head with the hammer fist, like pretty much anti-wrestling elbow style, but with hammer fists instead of elbows. And, you know, Almeida eventually turns over and, you know, can't take the punches anymore. And the ref stops the fight. So I thought that that's what happened. I thought it was just, you know, Almeida went for the takedown, got stuffed and got punched in that position. But on the slow motion recap, you can see when he's going for that takedown initially, it's not that he fails the takedown. It's that Blaze lands an uppercut under the armpit of Almeida and hits him on the chin. And Almeida kind of like, you see him like drop, like he goes up and he drops from the uppercut. And that's when he ends up on his knees and can't finish the takedowns after he gets hit from that shot. So it was a great spot by Blaze to find that punch in that tight exchange. And even better job to capitalize on it when he recognized that Almeida was hurt from it and land those follow-up hammer fists to seal the deal. You know, we knew that Almeida was going to have a lot of trouble in this fight because Blaze is the first real wrestler that he's fought. He's the only real wrestler in the heavyweight division besides Almeida. So, you know, it seemed like an easy pick. That first round made it seem like not such an easy pick. But I was happy that Blaze was able to pull it out and get that victory there. Very happy for the guy and happy for my wallet as well. The next one went going down the card was Macy Barber versus Caitlin Cherminara, or Caitlin Chookagian, formerly known as artist formerly known as Caitlin Chookagian. Macy Barber was able to, you know, just out grit her and land the bigger punches like we thought. I had her by decision, and I'm happy I did because that's exactly how the fight played out. Gamrot did his thing against RDA.
I will say this. Dos Anjos looked damn good.
He did. He did. He looked really good. He looked he's really a great fighter, man. There's a reason that we talk about him like he's a legend, you know?
Well, I mean, just at this age, though, still fighting these guys that are, you know, Gamrot's no slouch, man. And I mean, he get in there, and he was, you know, I would, you know, not too far off from a victory.
Yeah,
you know, that was impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he looked really good in that first round, man. He was laying some good shit on Gamrot. He hurt him a couple times. You know, two of the judges gave him that first round, but that second and third round, Gamrot, he just has that style that, you know, if you don't kill him, he's gonna drown you. It's very similar to Merab, you know, where he's not gonna hurt you with his punches. He's not even really gonna threaten you with ground and pound or submissions. But he's going to grind you into the fence. He's going to grind you into the ground, and eventually you're going to get tired. And that's exactly what he was able to do against Dos Anjos, who, to his credit, stayed tough the entire fight, but was never able to really get back that magic that he had in that first round. That first round was a great one for Dos Anjos, and a round that made me very nervous as somebody that picked Gamrot by decision. But it ended up being death taxes and Gamrot by decision, man. Whether you like it or not, you know, the guy in his last fight, the one before this against Jalen Turner, I thought he lost, but I bet on Gamrot by decision, and that's how it plays out. The one before that against Arman Tsarukyan, I thought he lost, but he got the fucking decision, so you know what I mean? It is what it is. This is what he does. That's so more credit to the guy.
They call him Little Below.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they call him, his name is The Gamer, and that's really what it's like. You know what I mean? He's like a video game player that's, you know, just doing enough to win. You know what I'm saying? Like he's getting these dubs, but the record looks strong. But when you see the gameplay, you're like, oh man, you know, it's a little rough. But that being said, climbs the ranks further.
Kyler Phillips put on a little clinic on Pedro Munhoz.
Yeah, man. I mean, Munhoz had some good shots in this fight, too. You know, this is, like we said on the preview, there's a lot of fights on this card where it was, you know, an old dog fighting a young buck. And more often than not tonight, the young buck were winning. But the old bucks had their say in a couple of those fights, too. You know what I mean? Poirier, Blaze, Jan. But, yeah, Phillips, Gamrot, Barber, Madalena, these young bucks were able to get it done. You know, Phillips came out looking a little bit, not gun shy, I wouldn't say, but just a little too he didn't engage in the way that I've seen him engage in the past, where he is a lot more calculated. He seemed a little bit too wild in the first round, I'd say.
You're talking about Phillips Lynn?
No, I'm talking about Kyler.
Kyler.
And Munoz was able to take advantage of that with the leg kicks and the right hand, and he was able to land some good punches and kicks in that first round. But Phillips was still able to win the round by coming back in that first and, you know, landing just an insane amount of volume on Munoz and, you know, even hurting him with a couple of body kicks at some point. And then as the fight grew on, okay, it just turned into one of those fights where Kyler Phillips just racks up volume on the other guy, and the other guy can't get back in the fight. He did it to Song Yadong, of all people, and he did it to Pedro Munoz on Saturday. And, you know, I love Kyler Phillips. I think he's got a great, very exciting style. I just wish he would fight more than once a year, man. You know, I want to see him get in there and, you know, mix it up with some of the top five of the division now, or maybe, you know, some of the top 10, even if they're not going to give him that shot yet, because, you know, Munoz is a big name, but maybe not from a divisional standpoint gets you there. I tell that to, you know, Chito Vera, who fought for the title after beating Munoz just now. But, big win there for Phillips either way. And great performance. And I'm excited to see how he goes through the division. And there's a lot of great matchups for him at bantamweight right now. My brother Hassan, the producer of the show, wants to see Phillips versus Jan. I think that's a crazy fight. I think that'd be a very high amplitude, high pace fight. If they do that for five rounds in the Apex or some shit, it'd be fucking sick. So we'll see how that goes if they make that fight, or if they do Jan versus Chito or something else. You can't really go wrong with any two bantamweights right now in the UFC. Whoever you put together, it's going to be an awesome fight. Felipe Lenz, you know, was able to do what he does against Ion Cutelaba.
I will say this. Ion Cutelaba looked better than I have ever seen him. I don't know if it was because he was hurt on that leg. They kept on, you know, shouting out on the commentary.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that just kind of made him reserved. But he looked, you know, measured. You know, what I said, whether that's by necessity or by plan, I thought he looked probably better. I was waiting for the Wild Hulk to come out. But as I watched it, I was like, oh, shit, I guess we're just going to get a nice, smart fight from him.
Which is not what he does. So that's why he lost, you know? It's like, come on, man. Get back in the truck. What are you doing?
Knock out or not be knocked out.
Yeah, dude. Like, he's going to have one round of cardio either way. So you might as well go for broke in that first round, bro. I mean, he won the first round, but then he just gets so tired. And Felipe Lenz was not that tired and was able to take him down and land more volume on the feet. Cutelaba, by virtue of trying to fight a technical fight, shows off his bad fight IQ. It's incredible. I can't believe it. You know what I mean? The guy just finds a way to continue to stamp on that horse that he's one of the stupidest fighters in MMA. And that's why we love him. But, I think, you know, if you're a Cutelaba, you got to go for broke early. And because you're going to get tired either way. I feel like the same way with what's that guy's name? Emin Shabazian in middleweight. It's like, you're going to get tired. So if you want a point fight for the first half in a round instead of going all for a knockout, be my guest. But you're going to lose that second and third round either way, so you might as well try to get the knockout, you know. We'll see. I want to see them develop their gas tanks, and, then we'll see. But, you know, Kudzalab is still young, man. He's like 30 years old, I think. So, you know, he could still improve, and he's definitely entertaining, so he's not going anywhere. And Lynn's, on the other hand, 38, able to get a victory at this stage of his career. It was a pick 'em fight, but, you know, solid victory there for Lynn's. And the guy's a smart fighter, man. I think he trains at ATT, and you can kind of see it in his style because he's very – and I think the mark of the ATT fighter, at least, you know, the highest level dudes in the gym are very aware of the fight. Very aware of the positioning. And when I say aware of, I mean, obviously everybody's aware of the fight. They're in there, they're getting punched and kicked. But some people tend to kind of, you know, close their eyes and swing for the wind. And some people are, you know, watching tape and seeing that whenever he throws his jab, he's open for a left hook or something like that. And I feel like the ATT crowd is a lot more measured and a lot more smart in the middle of the fight. They're able to make adjustments and, you know, build as the fight goes on. Guys like Dustin Poirier, guys like Jorge Masvidal, guys like Joanna Jędrzejczyk, or, you know, women like Joanna Jędrzejczyk, these kind of fighters are, you know, they might lose the first round and then they're going to fucking turn it up on you the rest of the fight. You know what I mean? And a lot of times either get a finish or, you know, win a decision by virtue of their resilience and their not only game planning, but ability to adapt in the fight. So, you know, great performance there from Linz, gets it done. And then in the next fight, the Battle of the Michaels, Michelle Pereira was able to get it done, dude. And, you know, that was a great call from you, Jordan. Pereira was all over it.
I do what I can, man. He wanted that A.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, he got the A. I'll tell you how much. He beat it out of Michelle Olszewczyk's neck, you know. He started off the fight with, you know, he had a perfect blend in this matchup of his wild man and his technical fighter, you know. He came out explosive, landed a really nice shot to the body that, you know, hurt Olszewczyk. And instead of going for broke and going for flying knees and spinning shit, he just took him down and grabbed his neck. It was a great move, dude. It was very smart, very calculated. Get in there, get out of there, 1 minute finish. Can't complain, dude. What more can you want?
Yeah, no, why can't everybody do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, tell that to the next guy, you know what I'm saying? Rebellus to Spain. He's like, oh, I can do that. Don't worry about that. This dude's fucking insane, man. I had money on him by first round finish. I had even more money on him to win under half a round, and it took him all of 18 seconds to get Josh Parisian out of there.
Hey, you know what? That's about as long as the last three combined. So, you know, good to Josh Parisian for lasting that long.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. The last three guys are 19 seconds. Josh Parisian got 18 seconds. So, you know, good on him. But, you know, Despain obviously hits so hard. Was able to... he came out with his hands completely down as he does and landed a couple of good punches and slipped. And then when he slipped, you know, Parisian tried to rush him on his way up and he was able to stand up, center himself and land a check hook and a right straight before Parisian was able to close the distance and land one punch and just fucking dropped Parisian right on his face. And followed up with some huge shots on the ground, man. And what more do you want to see, you know? Rebellus to Spain gets that first round knockout, and I make a lot of money. And it was good, you know?
God, dude, he hit the first time to Spain hit him, like, good the first time. He dropped, he's like, fuck this, I don't want no more of this.
Yeah, no.
Oh, my God.
I don't blame him.
I want to see him in a real fight, though. And, like, with someone that, fuck, I mean, I guess a real fight, you know? I'm just curious. Like who, though? Yeah, I have no idea. Who the fuck wants to fight him? I don't.
Put him against that motherfucker that just got jabbed up against Jarzino Rozenstruik, Shamil Gaziev. But not actually, because that guy, his eyes all busted up, and Rebellus just got out of there in 18 seconds. So
he's probably not too tired.
Yeah, he's probably not ready, you know?
I don't know. Who would you put him next? Like, that is a good question.
Martin Boudet or any one of these, like, sucker fucking... fat heavyweights. I want to see him beat up more fat heavyweights. I'm going
to
make more money.
You know who we should give him to? Who's that dude that just fought Alexander Arlovsky?
Andre Arlovsky. Oh, Waldo Cortez Acosta.
That's who I want to see. Let's see him dance in front of that.
Good idea. That's a great idea, Jordan.
Dana White, book it now.
Yeah, Waldo Cortez Acosta. I heard him say that Rebellus is Despain's mom's a bitch. So, I mean, if I was Rebellus, I wouldn't stand for that.
I wouldn't stand for that. Hey, Despain, I think you should take it. I think someone needs a call out.
Yeah, give him a stern talking to, you know? I just want to talk.
Did he really say that?
No.
Oh, God, dude. I'm about to say, fucking, I know he's stupid. I heard it, so that makes it true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, people are talking about it. that guy is going to be a problem for anybody at heavyweight, man. What more could you want? A giant guy that hits really hard, you know? But yeah, then you had CJ Vergara getting wrestled to death by Asu Almabayev. It happens.
Excuse me.
And Joanne Wood put on a career-ending performance to marvel at, man. Good job from Joanne Wood. I had Marina Moroz in this fight. I thought she was going to win by decision, and she got pretty close to that, you know, winning on one of the judges' cards. But I thought Joanne won watching the fight. She won the second and third round, in my opinion. She hurt her really bad with that spinning back fist, which has always been kind of a signature move for her in her career. So it was cool to see her pull it out in her last fight. And good little capstone to the career, and I hope she doesn't come back, because this was about as winnable a fight she's going to get at this stage. And she did it, man. She did a great job, and I'm proud of her. You know, good career there for Joanne Calderwood, or Joanne Wood, now known as. You know, that was a pretty solid way to start the card. Overall, man, it was a fucking kick-ass card, dude. Although, the whole time, there was a lot of finishes. The fights that went to decision were pretty fun to watch, you know. And then the main card was fucking sick, dude. Awesome card. And next week, you know, the UFC, they gave us what we wanted this last week. They said, you know, you want a bantamweight main event for the belt? Let's go. You want, you know what I mean, a lightweight banger in your co-main event and a great card that's stacked with names that you know. And now we have to get through another serving of heavyweight five-round fights at the Apex. Oh, yeah, baby. That's
well,
right.
I mean, it's in between 299 and 300. You got most of your big names, so we had to kind of figure that anyway, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to meet that quota.
But, you know, with that being said, how often do we come into a fight night not super excited and then come back and be like, whoa, blown away about that?
Let's hope so. I mean, there are some pretty good fighters on this card. I'm not going to talk too much shit about it, but the main event is just doo-doo dog water, in my opinion. You know, I think it's an easy fight for Marcin Tybura. I'm going to be honest with you. We'll break down the fight in a little bit more detail, but Tuivasa's looked like shit these last couple of years, and Tybura hasn't. He's been pretty good. He's been pretty motivated, and he's good at the things that Tuivasa's not, like wrestling. And that's really all there is to it in my eyes. You know what I mean? I mean, unless Tuivasa is able to catch him early with something, which, you know, Tom Aspinall was able to do. But Tom Aspinall is that fucking guy. So I don't, you know what I mean? I don't hold that loss too much over Tybura's head. I do like Tybura in the fight. And I think he's going to be able to get it done here in the underdog spot against Tuivasa. Yeah. You got a pick on that one?
No, I'm probably just going to watch this card.
Yeah, I mean, there's really not much to say. We should just breeze through it real quick. Brian Battle versus Andre Luce is a pretty exciting fight, actually. I like Brian Battle in the fight. I think he's a great fighter. Oben St. Preux versus Kennedy Nzengiku. I've never been more confident in Kennedy Nzengiku to get a knockout than against Oben St. Preux. I am going to put him to get it in the second round because he's a bit of a slow starter, and St. Preux's been, you know, finished in the second round several times throughout his career. Christian Rodriguez, C-Rod, is fighting Isaac Dolgarian. Dolgarian looks like a pretty solid wrestler. C-Rod is a great fighter. I'm a big fan of him. He's an underdog in this fight. I like his chances. I'm going with C-Rod. Macy Chasson versus Panda Kianzad. Another good underdog spot for Panda Kianzad. Gerald Meerschaert versus Brian Barberena. That's a fun fight. Natan Levy versus Mike Davis. That's a great fight for Palestine supporters. Mike Davis is going to beat the shit out of Natan Levy, I think, and it's going to be pretty fun to watch. Josiah Nunez versus Chelsea Chandler will be hilarious. Josiah Nunez is like 5'1", and Chelsea Chandler is like 5'8", or something ridiculous. So, and she's such a hard hitter, Josiah Nunez. And Chelsea Chandler, in her last fight, famously ran away, sprinted away from Norma Dumont.
She's trying to tire her out, Daniel.
Yeah, that's what it is. She's trying to get away, you know. She pulled a page out of Lenny Kravitz's book in that fight. I wanna get away, you know. So we'll see what happens when she fights the smallest fucking John Lineker prototype in the division. and Josiah Nunez. We'll see what happens. I'm excited for it. Then Ode Osborne's fighting Jafel Filio. That's a pretty cool fight. Filio gave Makhachev a tough matchup, so this should be interesting. And that's pretty much all there is to it on this card. I think Thiago Moises is fighting some guy, so maybe he'll get a finish too. But you know, I'm gonna put together a very small betting slip for this weekend. Don't go too crazy. Last week we did pretty good. We went 4-2, and you know we've been pretty good this year so far. So I'm not gonna try to risk that by picking fighters on this card that I'm not that confident in. So keeping it short and simple, I like Martian Tybura, like I said. I like Brian Battle against Andre Lusa. I like Nzenjuku by knockout, and I like Christian Rodriguez. And that's all I'm doing. I won't touch the rest of it, I swear. You know, and we'll see what happens, man. I think I'll put a little prop piece on Kennedy by second round KO. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that card. You had any closing thoughts on this card or on 299, Jordan?
No, I mean, it was awesome. You know, I think we're very lucky to get this card and 300. And this fight card might be a little bit, you know, not super great. But the next two, specifically the one after that with Aaron Blanchfield on ESPN, I'm very excited for.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to that card, man. I'm pumped.
I know. Atlantic City going to hand out some business cards if you're there.
Yeah, I will.
You better find out who's.
It's gonna be a great time. Mm-hmm. I think Blanchfield's gonna win, but you know we'll break that down.
Yeah, we'll break that when we get there.
All right, thank you very much, folks. It's been a pleasure. Take it easy. Next week, maybe not the greatest, but you know we'll see how it all plays out. And pretty soon down the pipeline, we got UFC 300. We're going to bring in Bloodsport MMA again to talk about that card. So it should be awesome. Thank you very much for watching. And yeah, take it easy, y'all. You know, we made some good money last week. Let's keep it rolling this week. Peace out.